This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. Last month, a Detroit man finally gained his freedom after more than 41 years in prison. A Wayne County Circuit Court judge vacated the first-degree murder conviction against Ladura Watkins because it was based on a discredited scientific method. Watkins won his freedom with the help of the Western Michigan University Cooley Law School Innocence Project. Marla Mitchell-Sashon is the director of the Innocence Project. Thank you very much for being with us.
My pleasure.
Let's go back and talk about how Ladura Watkins was actually convicted of this crime in the first place.
There were three key pieces of evidence that were used against Mr. Watkins, the one that you mentioned, the unreliable hair comparison evidence. Secondly, a unindicted co-defendant who implicated him, who within 5 years of the conviction recanted his testimony. And finally, a miscellaneous police file that was never turned over to the defense that contained favorable information about Mr. Watkins.
When did you get involved in the case?
That's not an easy question to answer. We initially looked at the case in around 2011, 2012, and our focus is to locate biological evidence and DNA test it. Unfortunately, the biological evidence, the hairs that we were trying to locate in Mr. Watkins' case was destroyed. So in 2012, we closed the case. Mr. Watkins, over the years, has filed many post-conviction motions, sometimes with lawyers, sometimes without. And we reopened the file in the fall of 2016 to specifically attack the hair comparison.
How does this method of comparing hair samples end up being something that they actually ended up using in court? I mean, it just seems interesting now that we find out that this shouldn't have been the way they were doing business, right?
Well, unfortunately, it's not just hair comparison. There's several techniques that have been used over the years in the criminal justice system, like hair comparison, like bite mark impressions, that actually does not have scientific support. And what has happened is that in the last 10 years, the scientific community, the legal community has taken a closer look. And in 2015, the FBI asked for a review of its own agent's testimony regarding hair comparison. The problem with hair comparison, there's a number of problems with it, but one of the problems is that it's not a scientific tool to link a particular individual to a crime scene. Nevertheless, that's exactly what it has been used to do in hundreds of thousands of cases.
So is the review of the scientific evidence and the fact that, of course, in some ways, science has gotten better at being able to trace DNA, et cetera, has that shined a light on the number of innocent people who are in prison right now for crimes that they never committed?
Well, keep in mind that DNA evidence, biological evidence in a criminal case is in a small percentage of cases. So what the DNA cases have done is when you are able to DNA test a sample from a crime scene, you can link that evidence to a particular person. And what we've learned through the over 350 now DNA exonerations is that people are wrongfully convicted at a much higher rate than we might have guessed. So with the advent of DNA testing, these other techniques that have so no scientific basis have come under scrutiny and then challenged, because what we find in a wrongful conviction is that typically more than one thing went wrong. And one of those things might be a false forensic tool was used.
So when you are thinking about which cases you're going to work on with the Innocence Project, are there more cases than you can realistically get to? In other words, are there some that you would like to take and you say, well, we've got to pick, we've got to categorize?
The Cooley Law School Innocence Project is focused on DNA cases. We make two exceptions to that. One is Mr. Watkins' case, where the DNA evidence is destroyed and there are other new facts that suggest that the individual was wrongfully convicted. And the second exception that we make is when we actually are able to locate evidence, test it, but are unable for scientific reasons to obtain a result. And again, we have worked on the case and we have new evidence of innocence, and we will continue to pursue that case. We've screened, I believe, over 5,500 cases since 2001, and we often reject cases where perhaps we feel or there our instincts tell us or even some facts suggest to us that that person is innocent, but we're not obviously able to help everyone. You can't get back into court once you're convicted of a crime unless you do have new evidence.
And when you do have new evidence, how tough is it to overcome, I guess, the bureaucracy, if that's the right word, of getting a hearing and getting in front of a judge and making your case?
Well, I really appreciate that question. Typically, in our legal system, you cannot go back to court numerous times. The trial is the centerpiece of the criminal justice system, and after you're convicted at your trial, then you have an appellate process, which typically focuses on legal errors. And in innocence cases, there may very well be legal errors, such as suppressed evidence in Mr. Watkins' case, but also if you focus on the hair comparison issue and the fact that our evaluation of that type of testimony has changed over the years, typically it's very difficult to challenge something again. And Mr. Watkins' defense attorney in 1976 filed a motion to keep the hair comparison evidence out. Mr. Watkins litigated that issue in several courts over the years without success. So the fact that we were able to raise this new issue based on new scientific findings is the direction that the courts really need to go. The courts have to be more receptive, particularly when someone's claiming innocence, to look at a case again, which is not how the criminal justice system is set up.
So in the Detroit News story about Ladura Watkins being released, you told them, you know, that you were going to have a little celebration. My grandma used to say, you name it, we'll do it. And I'm sure that he has enjoyed getting out of prison and has had a chance to soak it in. But then there's reality that this is someone who's been out of society for 40 years. What happens to him now?
Well, it's a huge challenge for anyone who's exonerated. If you can just imagine that your whole life is taken away from you for 42 years, and then you're trying to put that back together. Obviously, the first question in Mr. Watkins' case was, where was he going to go? He grew up in the Detroit area, but he lost his parents during his incarceration. He really has no immediate family in the Detroit area. He's very fortunate in that he had two cousins who supported him for 42 years, but one lived in Ohio and one lives in San Diego. So one of the first questions was, you know, where are we going to get clothes for our client? Where is he going to go the first night that he's released? And, you know, the list goes on with the challenges of reacclimating, you know, getting identification, housing, job training, food, shelter, medication. Mr. Watkins had a couple of prescriptions, and that's a challenge.
Is he eligible for any sort of financial restitution or aid as someone who has, you know, gone through the criminal justice system, served time in prison for a crime he didn't commit, and now has had a judge vacate that conviction?
Well, before March 17th of this year, he did not, but fortunately, Michigan has a wrongful imprisonment compensation act that went into effect in March of this year. There are two key components to that act. One is that the exonerated individual can trigger services, much like someone who's paroled. So he can receive assistance with housing, medical attention, psychological services, job training. And the other component is he can file a claim in the Court of Claims asserting his wrongful imprisonment and his factual innocence, and if successful, potentially be awarded $50,000 for each year of wrongful imprisonment.
So as you mentioned, that's a relatively recent change in Michigan. Have some of your clients who've gone through this process that you've worked with through the Innocence Project, has getting out of prison at times been a struggle because the institutions that were there, you know, taking care of them don't exist? And frankly, it may be very difficult to turn around and just all of a sudden find a job after having been in prison for decades, perhaps.
It's particularly challenging, not just because you haven't been in society, but because even though your conviction has been set aside, there are ways to essentially, you know, trace someone's history. And despite the fact that you might say, I was wrongfully convicted, the fact that you had that interaction with the criminal justice system and often spent a number of years in the criminal justice system alone makes people hesitant to hire you. And again, you know, Mr. Watkins was 19 when he was arrested. So he lost all the years of his life, you know, all the opportunities for job training, for education. He took advantage of everything that he could in prison, and he's a very strong individual and highly motivated. But it's still not going to be easy for a man who went to prison when he was 20 years old and is now 61 to reintegrate into society on a number of levels.
Marla Mitchell-Sachon, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you very much for having me.
Marla Mitchell-Sachon is the director of the Western Michigan University Cooley Law School's Innocence Project. This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans.